This episode is brought to you by ACT Entertainment. The only thing better than a fixture that is reliable, affordable, and flexible is one that can wow your audiences with something they've simply never seen before. The new Ayrton Zonda 9 FX wash fixture ticks those boxes and then some. With incredible output of up to 25,000 lumens and billions of colors, the new Zonda will find a place on nearly any project, and once it's there, the totally new liquid effect on the fixture face will cement it as your client's favorite. Also on display at LDI for the very first time is the little brother to the Zonda 9, the Zonda 3. With all the same liquid effects and identical LED packages, the Zonda 3 provides a huge wow look in a much smaller package. ACT Entertainment is thrilled to bring you the Ayrton Zonda 9 and Zonda 3 to North America for the very first time. Be sure to check them both out. So I hit record this time.
That's a good start. Yay.
I did hit record this time. We recorded, didn't record 30 minutes of conversation in the previous, with a gentleman who was very tired and had lost his car and everything else. So that went over really well. But yeah, we just had a great chat with Chris McMean from Christie, got his views on the show and some of the products that he's seen out there that he really likes. But now we are going to be talking with a gentleman who works with Live Event Productions through their Orlando Zenith office. And as I understand, you're also sort of a key part of the product decision-making loop in live events, which we'll talk about a little bit more. And so I have, first of all, I have Brad Nelms here with me again.
Howdy, everybody.
And we now have Ben Coker as well.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. No, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy. You're out there looking at a whole bunch of product that Steven probably won't let you buy. And
we'll see.
So I'm saving you from aggravation. Just think of it like that, you know. But, you know, first and foremost, for those listening who don't know you, there probably are a few people because you're kind of a quiet guy. You're not one of these guys like me who's obnoxious and loud and out there in people's faces all the time.
Of course.
So tell us a little bit about your background, you know, who you are, what you do kind of thing.
I'm a lighting obsessed person who became a
lighting obsessed person
from stagehand to lighting tech up through the ranks to become a touring LD and then became a technical director at a lighting company in my hometown, Orlando.
Yeah, that was pretty quick.
Yeah, super quick. Toured for about 12 years and now I've been at Zenith for about five, just right over five actually.
Yeah.
And it has become my home and a passion to help on the production side of it, not so much the show side of it.
Yeah,
And really kind of dive deep into gear and what the market wants and, you know, help put our company in the best position possible.
What is your official role at Zenith?
Technical director.
Yeah. So, first of all, going back to your LD stuff, are you still doing any touring, festival, anything?
I'd still, I have one artist that I work for, and I do designs for him and do the production designs, and then I go and we'll actually program the shows with a director that I have that goes and takes it on the road, and I don't so much travel with it. I go to some shows here and there, but more so on the design, original programming, and then it kind of gets turned off.
Yeah, and so which artist is that?
Artist named Porter Robinson. Yeah.
I knew that, but I just wanted to make sure you actually said it.
Yeah. As you said, I'm a quiet guy. I don't like kind of put it all out there.
So for Brad, who doesn't know who Porter Robinson is, I'm sure... This is like an EDM artist, Porter Robinson,
right.
And very popular, pretty big show, and also does a festival.
He does a festival every year called Second Sky. He started as a DJ and turned into more of a pop act. I mean, he is full live instruments, now has a full live band, and he is singing around front manning a band, basically. And it's an incredible show to watch, and incredible growth as an artist.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, it's given you an opportunity not only to design, but to supply some of these new products that you're out here searching for and finding and, you know, put them into action, and then, you know, obviously convince the company to buy them too and have some work for them.
Of course.
Right out of the gate. So yeah, that's cool. So, you talk about technical director, and so I know that you've recently transitioned from, you know, working with Chaz and Zenith as a local Orlando smallish shop, which always did really great work. And I've been friends with Chaz for a very long time. But the company was recently purchased by a new group of businesses called Live Event Productions, right?
Correct.
And so how has that been?
It's been great. Live Events has a phenomenal leadership team that's been very, very helpful for us. Their company culture matched what we've built at Zenith for years almost perfectly. And it's been, I mean, the absolute best experience I could possibly imagine by trying to merge companies.
Yeah.
They really listen to us. They take our lead on what's good for our market and our business. And I couldn't ask for a better situation from a growth perspective for us.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I know Steven very well, who's the CEO of Live Events. And I know you, I know Chaz really well. And from a cultural standpoint, it just seems like such a perfect fit, because you're both very people-focused,
very
people-centered companies.
Yes.
And I know that's Steven. You know, Steven wants to build a company around people, not around gear, not around brands, not around any of that stuff, but around people, really great people. And so I can't imagine that not being a great fit.
That's a big feat, though. I mean, it's, you know, being M&A being so popular, if you want to call it that, in the industry right now. It's I've been on both sides of that aisle before, and it can be really painful if it's done poorly. So
absolutely. Yeah. We were just having a conversation in our office that everyone in our building that's there full time, except for two people, had a previous relationship with someone at Zenith. It was either a recommendation from a friend or someone that we knew inside the industry that we've had years of, you know, relationship history with that we've brought in.
Sure.
We very rarely in the history have brought in people that we have no, you know, knowledge of who they are as a person to actually come in and join our team.
Yeah.
It's an important thing.
Yeah. It's, you know, nowadays it's hard. There's obviously a lack of labor, as everybody knows.
Yeah.
It's hard to find really good people. And, you know, we've kind of taken the approach of we want to build our workforce very slowly, and we want to hire people we know that are going to be good. And, you know, we'll take the extra work on our shoulders now instead of just hiring people to get people into place.
Yeah.
Take the extra workload for now.
Well, the problem is, you know, like some of the stuff Brad's talking about, you, when you're growing quickly and you're making wrong hiring decisions, you're basically, there's a danger of inserting cancer cells in and breaking that culture. So when culture is so important, and you know, I know you guys so well, you, Angela, Chaz, all the people in your building, you're like a family. You're like a weird, dysfunctional, but functional family.
Absolutely.
And you love each other. You love working together.
We do.
You know, everybody has everybody's back. Like, although you all have specific titles, everybody knows every job in that company. You know, it's almost like a small family business, but, you know, I know how quickly you're growing. I've heard a lot of stuff from Chaz and whatever, and you guys are doing an incredible job growing and keeping that culture in check.
Thank you very much. It's one of our top priorities for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Quality and people. Those are our two things.
And the other thing that I believe is that you've pretty much been leaned on, because I don't remember what you called yourself, a gear junkie or a gear...
I all kinds of things, but lighting obsessed since I was very young.
Obsessed, that's it, right. So
I was the kid in my bedroom that had any kind of light I could possibly imagine. I was the one who was getting the American DJ DVDs back in the 90s and watching those for fun. Like, it's a mental problem for me. I can't say no.
Have you ever had a girlfriend, Ben?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm happily married.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just wondering how.
You know,
does she
ask myself that
like
every day?
Yeah.
I tricked her.
You ordered her by mail through one of the American DJ catalogs or something.
Here's the model in the DVD. That's the real reason.
No. You guys are going to get me in trouble.
That's funny. Or is she a lighting person?
She is not.
And you met her at a class for lighting.
I met her actually at college. We were in the same dorm, and it has worked great ever since.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. It happens.
Is she industry at all?
No, she's in marketing. Mm-hmm. She works for a huge sports conglomerate company.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So, but you've been leaned on to make a lot of the decisions on gear or to help make a lot of the decisions on gear. I happen to know that you're a very smart guy when it comes to gear. You know what to look for. You know what works, what doesn't work. You're very particular on what gear you use or don't or bring into your shop or don't. Mm-hmm. And so have you gotten much more involved sort of on a system-wide level with live events?
We're heading that way. We're starting to talk a lot more globally for all locations, all different outfits to kind of start making a little bit more consistent of an inventory purchase decisions.
Yeah.
I think that'll grow over the next few years, of course, as we learn more about each companies and start doing things the same way. Right now we're integrating, all the inventory control and things like that. That's going to make a big difference going forward as well.
Getting everybody on the same systems.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is important.
It's one of the hardest things to do.
It is.
Well, we just talked with Chris McMean from Christie about a similar topic, which is really just bulking up on certain types of gear and not having 12 of everything. And so making really good decisions on gear and then buying a whole bunch of that gear instead of, so they don't like, when there's a Viper this and a Viper that and a Viper this and 20 different versions of a Viper because they just want to buy a lot of one.
Right.
Right. And so that they don't run out and they always have availability on that product or whatever. I think it's generally a good direction to go versus having one of everything and never having enough to do a full show of one product. Right.
I think it's tougher to do that nowadays than it was 8-10 years ago.
Yeah.
There's so many good new products out.
That's true.
And so many good unique products. And designers, as you guys both know, are more specific about what fixtures they have to have than ever before.
Really?
Yeah, I find that anyway. Viper became like the standard light that everyone would accept.
Yeah.
There almost every spot fixture I know of, there's some reason someone won't accept it now.
Yeah.
But 5 years ago, everyone would take a Viper, no problem.
Right. Huh.
Nowadays it's like, okay, well this one doesn't have this. It's, at least we do a lot of high end corporate. So it gets very, very specific on what they want. As long as you find a product that is solid enough that everyone will accept, I think it's a great idea to buy as much as you can of it.
But it just feels to me though, like now every company has like a profile, a framing profile, a wash beam. Mm-hmm. Like everybody sort of has a similar range that usually will be accepted as alternates to whatever was on the original spec.
Usually.
Yes. Right.
But yeah. It has to be a good enough product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I think most manufacturers have done a great job with the LED profiles and spots. To make them accepted by most people at this point.
Right, yeah.
Almost every new fixture that we see come out, which is a lot of them, are all very solid.
Yeah.
They're all good. There's not a reason if I'm doing a show that I wouldn't take something from this company, that company, that company, as long as it fits what I need to do.
Yeah.
What is your stance on, with LED, one of the challenges, of course, is color temperature, right? So mm-hmm. do you have like a, we're always going cool white, we're always going warm white, we mix and match?
I would say 95% of the requests we get are always the cooler engines because they just want the output.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Anything like in the Ayrton line, the S is always requested. Very rarely is it TC unless it's a film, broadcast, or theater. And then maybe they'll ask for TC. But, the demand for those warmer native, higher CRI fixtures is just not there for us and what we do.
Sure. Yeah.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. What about, one of the things that I've heard now, which drives me crazy, because for the longest time working for lighting manufacturers, I remember losing jobs because we didn't have an even enough field. Clay Packy had the most even field, mm-hmm. and we always had a hot spot, whether I was at High End or Martin. We had a hot spot they had an even field. We lost the job. Like, especially Disney, you know, they'd always be like, no, you have to have a perfectly flat field. And only Clay Packy had that. Mm-hmm. Now people are turning away LED fixtures because they don't have a hotspot.
They're making lenses to give them a hotspot.
Totally designer preference.
It's driving
me nuts. It goes both
nuts.
Ways. Yeah. I'm personally a hotspot person because, you know, I think coming from, you know, more of a static conventional fixture background where you're used to having that, and it's just something that you have to deal with. I think that's just how you learn to do your stage washes.
Right. Yeah.
There's a lot of guys out there that do still want the even field. So like you mentioned, there's people making lenses to make the hotspot inside of fixtures that are even field or flat field fixtures.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just feels like you're inserting a negative thing. You know what I mean? You're putting a flaw into the fixture by adding a hotspot into it.
Depending on how it's done, I think there's good ways to do it. And I think we will actually probably see some manufacturers, like we do a frost inside the fixture, do a hotspot lens in the fixture.
Is one of those. I'm trying to remember who did it, but somebody did that, and I don't remember what it was. But
that's interesting.
Yeah,
that is so interesting.
Well, I mean, if you're going to use it for an aerial effect, you know, drop that hotspot in.
If you're about reach, that's the only time that it makes sense.
Yeah. So how has business been for you guys this year? Like
crazy.
Nuts.
I think everyone has the same story. I mean, we imagined the industry coming back, but we could never imagine this much coming back.
Can you quantify what that is in any way? Everybody says it's the busiest year they've ever had, but is that like, you know, does it mean that you're booked out forever? Does it mean that you're negative everything? Does it mean that you've doubled your revenue? Like, what is the quantification of that?
everything above. You know, the lead times of actually confirming shows for us hasn't really gotten any further out. We're still confirming shows, you know, a few weeks out or maybe 2 weeks. If we're lucky, if it's a big show, maybe 6, 7, 8 weeks out. People are still kind of hesitant really to lock into a contract far in advance, of course. We are constantly short gear, availability wise. And we've you know, had a large influx of new equipment into the inventory as well. So as our inventory has grown, we're still finding ourselves short of a lot of things. Problems with, you know, cable is a huge one. Just getting cable in time, being able to stock enough of it and actually getting it to return from every show is its own feat by itself.
Sure.
You know, yes, the numbers are up. Yes, bookings are up. Number of shows are up. The size of shows are pretty good right now.
Everything's just so much harder though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the shows that used to be kind of like a back of your mind, don't think about it, it's going to be easy. There's always something that pops up that makes it difficult because now you've got to go try to subrent 10 of these because you're out. But finding 10 of those from another company who's as busy as you are is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, you find yourself trying to ship things from halfway across the country to fill 10 LECOs. And it's like, okay, now I've got to pay 10 grand to ship 10 LECOs across the country because you know, trucking is crazy.
Have you like pulled the cyber lights out of the corner yet and put those out on a show?
Not yet.
Well, Chris was just telling us that they had a show in Canada. It was a TV shoot or something, wasn't it? Where it was sky panels spec'd on it, and they ended up putting like a hundred Mac Encores on it.
That's a good swap.
And, you know, the designer said, I can make this work.
Yeah, great.
You know? And so,
We love designers that are willing to work with what we have available in inventory.
Well, I think they have to at this point.
Yes. If you want to be very specific, very picky, and you want this, you have to have an open wallet to make it happen at this point.
Yeah.
If you have a budget on a show, there's a very slim chance you're going to get exactly what you want.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's just the reality.
And sometimes the wallet doesn't even do it, I would imagine.
Yeah. No, sometimes it's still
impossible. It doesn't matter how deep the wallet is.
I mean, we can move mountains if we have enough time.
Unless they're from China.
Yeah.
Chinese mountains, they ain't moving right now.
Our relationships with our clients is very much so when they come in, they join our family. So in our prep space, we find out, you know, what kind of snacks they like, and we'll try to really cater to them and get what they want. But we also love the fact that we can just sit down and have a real conversation with the MEs and the LDs that we work with. A lot of folks that come to our shop, they're like, I just come to your shop because I like it here. It's fun to be here. It's happy to be here. If they forgot 20 DMX cables and they're ordered, cool, tell your sales rep. We'll have them there in 5 minutes. It's no process because it's just still small.
Sure.
It's right there local, and we can make things happen very quickly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So any thoughts about next year? Is it going to slow down? Is it going to keep going at this pace? Is it, or is that just the magic question that nobody knows the answer to?
I don't think anyone knows the answer completely. My gut tells me we're going to see very similar next year to what we had this year.
Yeah.
Workload wise. At some point, everything's cyclical. At some point, this is not going to continue at the rate that it's at. It's going to slow down at some point.
Yeah.
My gut more so tells me that's summer 2024.
Yeah.
But I could definitely be wrong on that.
Well, McMean just made a pretty good point. Chris from Christy just made a pretty good point in that it really depends what part of our business you're in, because
true.
Touring is probably going to start to slow down because everybody went out all at the same time.
And, yep.
And now it's gotten crazy. Ticket sales are starting to soften now. Although, was it you who was telling me that Taylor Swift?
Yeah, $11,000 at SoFi Stadium for Taylor Swift, Haim, and somebody else.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
I mean, that's retarded.
I saw resale tickets for $50,000 a seat.
Yeah.
In that show.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
So that brings up the whole Ticketmaster.
Well, yeah. What are
people
called?
Are very unhappy with.
What's that thing called? Dynamic ticket pricing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where, what was it? Adele that was 40,000 and Springsteen was 5,000. Now Springsteen's probably going, well, if Taylor Swift's getting 11,000, I should be 15, you know?
No.
I mean, what point do you run out of elite clientele that can pay for these tickets?
Who's buying these tickets?
That's actually an interesting point, particularly with Taylor Swift. I mean, I'm not like an expert on her, but just from what I understand of her being a pretty good person and like wanting to be close to her fans, that I would think that she would want to cap that. I'm kind of surprised.
Who told you that about Taylor Swift?
I don't know.
Because all
that's
I've,
what
ever
I've always heard.
All I've ever heard is she's a worse diva than Madonna or anyone else. Mariah Carey.
That's not the story that they sell in Nashville.
Yeah,
but maybe that's a sales pitch.
No, I've heard she's... Well, a designer who used to be her designer told me that she's the biggest diva, period, bar none. She's very difficult to work with. And early on, her mother was her manager. I don't know if she still is. But her mother wasn't very friendly either, apparently.
Interesting.
So, I don't know.
I have nothing to add to that because I have no clue.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless, I'm not paying $11,000 to see them.
No, absolutely not. I wouldn't pay $11,000 to see them.
I don't think I would pay $11 to see Taylor Swift, to be honest.
Full disclosure, my wife did get tickets to that at retail value. So.
Oh, wow. $11,000?
No, definitely not.
Well, the $11,000, I think, is face value for the SoFi.
Is that the actual
screenshot
that
I
saw? No, it was Ticketmaster, select your seat.
Oh, were you trying to buy tickets?
No, it was a Facebook post.
Oh, I thought you were trying to buy them.
No.
You're not a big fan?
I mean, I don't really go to any shows that I pay for, but...
That's true. That's a good point. No, I mean, but then, like I said, Chris McMean was telling us, you know, for next year, like he said, you know, convention work, corporates and stuff have really just started back up again. So that's getting huge, and that's going to be a big surge next year of the corporate stuff. And so, God, who knows?
I think on the corporate side, a lot of companies that have done away with their in-person offices are going to have those events to get the staff together.
That's
right.
True. That's a
good point. Yeah.
I think that's a big thing we're going to see, as well as, you know, without having the cost of the offices, some of them are going to have some write-off situations that they're going to have to be able to do. So I think we're going to see some really extravagant corporate events
coming. That's a good point, too.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Do you feel like your clientele is diverse enough across verticals that you'll see that smooth and it won't just be like major peaks and valleys?
You know, across the live events group, I think it's fairly well diversified.
Yeah.
I think every individual location will have their ups and downs, and each different outfit that we have has kind of like their core market that they do. We don't do a ton of touring out of Florida. It's really bad for routing, so no one really wants to start or end in Florida. So it's tough. But I mean, we have great relationships with theme parks, which is pretty static work. Obviously,
of course,
COVID takes everything out, but the theme parks are great work. The corporate work has been wonderful. So we are really lucky in that we have that really strong market of Orlando to kind of stay pretty static.
Yeah.
So let's talk about product. You know, I know you've only had a day at the show, but what have you seen that's cool?
A lot. There's a lot of new product out. There is, it's kind of overwhelming, actually. I'll kind of, in no particular order, kind of start from one side of the floor and go to the other.
Rewalk your
path. Yeah,
your
right? My walk yesterday was a maze. trying to just see and you know, catch up with people that we don't get to see. We've all been so busy. No one gets to talk anymore.
Yeah. Well, or you haven't been at trade shows for 3 years.
Yeah, exactly.
In some cases. Right?
I know you were here last year. I was here last year. Yeah. And it was nice. I think you made the comment. It was nice to be able to not worry about the overwhelming amount of product, but actually just sit and meet with people from the industry.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah,
it was cool.
But I'm happy that we're back to look at all of our lights.
It was like seeing the Stones in a theater versus in a stadium. Last year was just more intimate, and this year I think was like that, but a lot busier.
Yeah.
Next year is probably going to be just batshit nuts.
Probably.
Yeah.
We'll start with the big guys. Really, really like the Martin XIP. I think that's an interesting approach.
Even though you guys just bought the previous version of that?
Well, they're two different lights. So there's the PXL, Aura PXL, and then the Aura XIP. I think they're two very different lights, and I think they are kind of like a medium and a large kind of different situation.
Okay.
PXL is definitely brighter, larger face, more actual pixels to pixel map with, but the XIP is, to us, really, we're looking at it as more of like an Aura replacement.
Okay.
And there's a lot of value in the name Aura because, that's been a standard wash light for people for...
Will you take an Aura for an Aura?
Of course, right? Hey, do you want the new Aura? Or, hey, you got Aura XBs, I can give you this XIP.
Yeah.
It's kind of a really easy sell, and it's a unique take because I think it's currently at IP44 listing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's water resistant, but not fully IP65.
That was a weird move.
I'm curious to see how it's going to work out.
Yeah, that was a weird move because you can't say that it's weatherproof because then you're going to get in a lot of trouble because they're going to come back in broken and they'll say, but you said it was weatherproof.
That's part of the conversation is what is the warranty aspect? What's the coverage? What are the limitations of it?
Yeah.
I think if we decide to go that route personally, it's more of this is an indoor fixture that can go outside and it'll be okay to be under like an outdoor covered theater, but I don't want to put it outside for a month.
It probably helps you just being in Orlando because of the seawater and stuff in the environment that it'll just have more longevity.
Yes, totally.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What are the features of that thing? I don't even know.
I'm a big fan of the P3 processing control for all of the Ceptrons, Fatrons, the PXL, everything that Martin has to offer. Bang for buck, especially on parameter count as parameters become, obviously are expensive and more lights are, hey, you need 300 channels for this. Going with the P3 to be able to do the pixel map control of both of those fixtures is really nice because you can put them in basic mode and burn 32 channels and have full pixel control with video mapping.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that was a thing.
Which is really nice. Yeah. Whereas if you go to your traditional mapping, you've got to put it into that crazy channel mode and burn through parameters. So that's one of the big things I like.
What protocol are they running for that? Is it a proprietary thing?
It's their own P3 processing system that they use.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really solid.
Cool.
Yeah. We've toured it and it's been wonderful for us. It's nice to not have to carry a ton of processing gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else?
I think Zonda 9 and 3 are really, really nice wash lights as well.
Yep.
I think everybody goes to the ACT booth. That's one of the first places people go. And they have a great display of the Zonda 9. But 9 is it's a huge fixture.
It's big.
It's a statement and a rig for sure.
It's brighter than I thought it was going to be.
It is
like
really
in
bright.
Red. I was just like, and they've got it in a really deep red in that show thing that they're doing.
Yes.
And it's blinding. Like, it's bright.
Very intense.
Well, I think it was, I think it was the intent was to take a BI and a Wild Sun and give them a baby.
The comment I made on it, what I like about it is because it's such a large face, if you do the pixel chases across the face and you're back in a crowd, you can actually sense the motion.
Sure.
Because that pixel's traveling so far across the face. Whereas when you use a smaller fixture and you do those kind of chases, you don't necessarily get that shift so much. So it's nice to have the real estate on the front of the light.
That's an interesting thought. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the liquid effect?
Oh, I think it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's pretty incredible.
I think it's going to look incredible on camera. And I think it's very unique. I'm curious to. I haven't actually sat down and played with one in a show yet. I want to sit down and put one in a show or put a few in a show, and really kind of play with the different zoom ranges on it and see how it affects. We found some cool things in the Aura PXLs on tour that at certain zoom ranges you can kind of get the underwater effect out of the Aura. Like the Aura effect is strong enough you can get a little bit of a beamage out of it.
That's cool.
So we were using it as a stage wash and a color, and then that really sun beam ray kind of coming through from the Aura effect, which is really nice.
Yeah. Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I to me, it looks like a winner. I didn't really play around with the three at all. It's just kind of, it was sitting there static. Yeah. It looks cool. It's like the inner ring of
the exactly nine, what it is, right? The first two rings,
And then, of course, there's a six coming that'll be a little bit larger
of
and a little smaller than the nine.
Yep.
So what else? We talked earlier about the Zach Track,
yeah.
Smaller Zach Track package.
I love the Zach Track stuff. In that same booth, there's the Rocks clusters, which I think are really unique.
Okay.
It's a full-color LED blender.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I didn't look at that. Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and look at that.
They have a really good amber shift, and they...
They array together, too, don't they?
Yeah, they have, four different ways you can link them or connect them or mount them. Yeah. They're very, very versatile.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of what was that GLP thing, the honeycomb?
Oh, the K&V
Atom
and the Atom. Yeah. But you're really cool, really good, nice, light, bright blinder. Great color and white, even though it's a full color engine. It looks like they've balanced it really, really well. It's kind of off to the side and it's mostly in white, but if you're there, go ask them to put it in colors for you. It's impressive.
Yeah.
Are you a console guy, too, or just fixtures?
Oh, I'm console, fixtures, everything.
Have you looked at the new Neo 10, the Verilite console that just came out?
I have not yet, no.
I'm curious to see if it's... I mean, they hyped it up fairly well, I thought, but I'm curious to see if it's going to make a splash at all.
Yeah, Verilite's one of the booths I haven't made it to yet. I know 3600 is a big discussion point for a lot of people right now. I've fortunately seen it in our shop. It's a great-looking fixture.
You think so?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in person, but I know that a lot of people are interested in it just surely from where it sits and, the price and output kind of range.
Well, similar to the Aura and the Viper namesake in the industry. I mean, VL3600, everybody knows the 3K, everybody knows the 3500.
Right.
It's a comfortable place to be. It's not learning a new brand, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. What else? What's next? On the long list of,
This is a weird one. I really, really like the Ultratech Premier Plus fog machine. It's, not as big of an output as the G3000, but it's hard to explain. It has these rubber feet on all eight corners of it and you can flip it vertically, flip it down. You can stack them and do a fog wall out of them. There's some really cool features about it.
That's a sensible feature.
Yeah. It's a different take on just a
and
really
you're not
rugged
sponsored
fog
by Ultratech.
I'm not at all.
Machine.
No. at the same time, I think the Fab from Haze Base is a phenomenal hazer, really good output. No heat up time. The new Haze Base stuff is really, really nice.
Did you see that fog gun?
No,
I
which was
kind
of cool. It kind of looks like a machine gun or something, and you just go, and it's like a CO2 blaster, but it's fog.
Huh. Interesting.
And I think it was Froggy's fog that was showing it or something.
Yeah.
But I didn't really look closely at it, but I just saw it and I went, well, that's kind of a neat idea.
Right.
I could see somebody wanting to use that,
I really like the GLP JDC lines. I think those are phenomenal looking fixtures. I actually just got to use those on a show, and it probably my new favorite strobe.
You found some?
Yeah, we did. And they're so flexible in what you can do, and I like them because you can kind of hide them into your set. It's not like this big face LED.
Yeah, yeah.
You can kind of sneak them in there, and it's really, really quality.
Well, and
light.
They've got a new one that I think they just announced at Plaza that's an IP-rated one. Am I right on that?
I'm not sure.
I could have made that up. I thought there was something in the GDC line that was coming out that I thought they announced at Plaza.
I'm not sure, actually, no.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. I could have made that up, too. I have no idea.
Yeah. What have you guys seen that you like?
You know, I think, I don't remember the name of it. I'm blanking on it, and I haven't seen it up close in person, but I saw Across the Way last night there was like a... Tesla coil dancing show thing. I don't know if you saw that or not. But
I heard that last year. Is it here again this year?
it was cool for the third of the show that it worked. But but across that, behind that, I saw this video screen that was like a transparent LED screen, but it's a mesh, and it had an amazing 3D effect that looked almost like a hologram. Like it was the detail, and it was super cool. Now, maybe when you get up close to it, it doesn't look as good. I don't know. But from, 100, 150 feet away, It was pretty impressive. Started with an M, some company that I had never heard of. I don't remember, but go check that out. It's back by the Circle Bar, kind of.
Okay. I haven't made my way back there yet. I'll have to do that today.
Yeah.
I think Clay Packy's back over that way as well, right?
Yeah, Clay Packy's on the far side.
I love the idea of the Valero Waves and the Valero Batten. I think those are really unique.
The Wave, yeah, the jury's out on that. I've heard mixed reviews. Like, some people have said it's a single-use effect.
Sure. But if you're doing, like, a red carpet runway entrance thing, I mean...
Oh, that's interesting.
What else are you going to use at this point?
Well, one thing I didn't know about it, McMean was just telling us, you know, because there's the... You know, the thing moves, the head moves or whatever, but there's also a parabolic inside, so you can kind of get like a pan and tilt out of the thing, right? And I didn't know that part. And
I didn't know that until you just said it, because I haven't looked at it yet.
Yeah, using that as a red carpet.
Just kind of quickly, and I didn't really dig into it,
right?
Because I'm not, whatever you call it, lighting obsessed.
Lighting obsessed, yeah. lumen power, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not quite as obsessed as you are. So, you know, for me, it was just kind of a quick look. Looks neat. Okay, move on to the next booth. Because they had no beer.
Yeah, of course.
It's the important part.
You know, and Claypacky used to have espresso. Like, they used to have the best espresso and little, like, Italian paninis or something. None of that. So,
well, I guess they know now. They need it back. Let's do it. I'm all about the espresso. Let's do it.
Yeah. So what else? What else did you see that was amazing?
I haven't looked at everything yet. I need to go around today and look at all the new LED Lecos.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in several of those because I really want an IP solution as well.
Yeah.
And I know there's some still being in the works that aren't here yet today.
Yeah.
But
what do you guys have currently that you'd be looking to upgrade or replace?
You know, we're a big ETC house right now, and we have a lot of the Lustre product. The problem is we don't have enough quantity of them.
Sure.
So
are you in Lustre 1s or 2s currently?
We're both, actually. Yeah, we have the pluses and the 2s. Both great lights. I just want to look around at what's out there before we make a big investment to buy into a big quantity of them.
Yeah. Chris was just talking about the Lustre 3 that he says
beautiful.
He's in love with it. It's a beautiful fixture. We talked about one thing. Elation has their Leco here that doesn't require any lenses or accessories or anything. It's all built in. It's all internal, the zoom and everything.
It's pretty bright.
It's an interesting concept.
It is.
You know, and I just wonder, you know, theater people, I think, are very stuck in their ways for the most part. Mm-hmm. So are they going to buy into this thing where they don't have physical lens tubes that they can change out and stuff?
I haven't gone and looked at that one in person yet. I've heard mixed opinions. Most people seem to like it.
Yeah.
I like the concept of it, especially from a rental house perspective.
Absolutely.
Not having separate lenses is like a dream, right?
Yeah. Well, you don't have to count them when they're going out. Count them back in. You don't have to, you know, have the right ones, the wrong ones. Oh, well, I only have 26 degree. I don't have, you know, I mean, it sounds like a no-brainer for a rental company, but just from a designer standpoint or whatever.
I'm curious to see if it fits the traditional top hat accessories and things like that. That
I believe it does.
Does it? Is the same size frame holder?
I saw it at Plaza, and I think it does.
Okay,
different gobo size. I know that. So they're shipping it with a package of gobos.
Oh,
like a box of 10 pretty standard leafs and breakups and stuff, right?
Cool.
And so they're trying to get over the objections.
Sure,
you know,
of course.
Why would somebody say, I don't want to use this?
Right.
Let's answer that question for them before they ask it, right?
Yeah, of course.
So,
I mean, I know the people always used to have an issue with, like, junior zooms or zoom lenses that are the true theater guys, because then you can't get the exact same combination of focal planes between the two versus a fixed lens. So true theater designers might never really adopt her, but I think incorporated in rock and roll, it certainly has a place.
Well, I think if you have an indexed actual hard stopping point in the adjustment at those traditional degrees, you can get away with that.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah. I know on the traditional zoom ones, it's kind of free the whole way. You just kind of guess.
Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you actually have hard stop points at those degrees, I think it's okay. Yeah.
Did you see the inner circle thing, the minute one or whatever it's called?
Photon
something or other?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Is there a use for that?
I don't know.
EDM. I mean, I would think for EDM, you could blast them in people's faces. And
we've certainly had requests for them. Usually it's actually corporate events for us that are requesting them.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
They want it as like a little, like, you know, grand entrance kind of thing. And it doesn't require the traditional laser sense to it, but you know, for me, I think it's a cool effect in certain rooms where it's dark. But more commonly, myself designing shows on a bigger scale, it just doesn't have the output that I need.
Did you see the new one though?
Is there a new one?
The photon.
Yeah. The one that has the LED lighting and the laser in it.
Because it's a lot brighter. The one that I saw last year had to be sort of a black box.
That was the
thing.
Square,
it was
right?
Very, yeah.
Yeah.
But it wasn't very bright. The one they have this year seems to be much brighter.
Okay. I mean,
I might be wrong.
In this hall, it's difficult to see anything to its true potential.
Yeah. Well, it's not even in the hall. It's in a demo room.
Yeah. Oh, then I got to go down and take a look at it in there then. Because I think demo room. The last time I saw it was actually in an application with ambient light. So I'll go take a look at it.
This one's in a demo room.
So I'm curious, since you're the geeky guy, kind of like I am, mm-hmm. the true gearhead. What's your thought on laser sources and how we jump into that? Are you guys interested in adopting any of that in the Cobra Stilos kind of flavors, or you think we're still too far out from it? Obviously, variances aside, because that's a whole different issue.
Yeah, I mean, the red tape is what prevents everybody from diving in pretty deep in that. Because, I mean, look, it's super appealing to have a laser source that creates a beam in good saturated colors that you can shoot half a mile.
Yeah.
What is it, like 1.5 degrees in the Cobra, I think?
Yeah, something crazy.
It's stupid. It's crazy.
You know, and I still haven't seen a Cobra in person.
They're smaller than I thought they would be.
Really?
They're about, if you're familiar with the rest of the Ayrton line, they're a little bit bigger than like Mistral Diablo kind of thing.
Okay. Obviously, I've seen the Stilos a ton, but you know, same thing. Yeah, there's a lot of desire to be into it, but... The red tape of just limitation.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll happen eventually.
It will.
They're being used everywhere else in the world. Well, literally only here that you can't.
You got to drown the FDA with just requests. They just get tired of it and they just say, go away,
it's,
right?
It's so obvious, though, that it's something that people want because they're very successful in Europe.
Yeah.
Both Stilos and already the Cobra.
And Asia, too.
Doing really well.
Yeah.
And Asia as well, yeah. It's so stupid. I mean, it just shows how the U.S. government operates so slowly.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the same way that they use a laser in a video projector.
Correct.
So why are video projectors not covered by the same?
Because you don't point at audiences. That's the difference.
You certainly could.
Well, you could, yeah. But I don't know.
There's nothing that prohibits you from pointing it at the audience.
I mean, when is the DL3 laser going to come out?
I don't know. Maybe.
But if it did, it would be accepted.
Yeah, of course. You're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense. It's stupid. You know, they need to learn that. And by the way, a Sharpie is much more dangerous on your eyes than
your curtains.
Stilos. Yeah. And your curtains and your clothes and anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember when Clay Packy first showed me the Sharpie, he goes, "What's this?" And he puts his cigarette in front of it and he lights his cigarette. And I'm like, "This is safe." Yeah, you know? I mean, it's putting
a sales pitch.
Much heat out the front lens.
We did a show where we built a clear floor, and we had 48 mega points underneath the clear floor that shot straight up through the floor. And we did a lot of testing with the acrylic and the mega point to see what kind of effects the acrylic would have. And fortunately, the acrylic was no problem. We had no issues with discoloration, no problems with melting, nothing. But if you set something on that, and it got hit by a mega point. It was only about 1.5 feet away.
Oh,
it would light fire, and then the acrylic would discolor and start melting almost immediately.
Wow. Just because of the way that it magnified.
That's problematic.
Yeah, well, we had a guy who threw, like, a packing blanket on it and didn't think about it.
Oh,
and then,
boy.
Like, you know, we lamped on the rig, and I was like, wait, okay, now we got to replace this entire acrylic panel.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, I mean, you have to be careful with those lights, especially mega points and points and Sharpies.
Yeah.
If you have the right focus length, you can... Definitely light some fire.
Not a good
damage.
Not a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, or the old icons, how it converged outside the fixture and then went like that. So at that point, that thing was pretty hot.
Absolutely.
Too, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Anything else that was incredible?
There's so much to see.
I heard the MA3 is going up like 10 or 15% or something by the end of the year.
I haven't asked anyone over there yet. Yeah.
But somebody told me that yesterday, and I was like, what?
Because
they had a pretty big price increase this year.
They did. I mean, I haven't heard of another one. I did have a good conversation with them yesterday, and we didn't go over that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everything is just crazy expensive. I would hate to be on the manufacturer side of it, knowing what the freight costs are
and just the whole
system.
To predict it is impossible.
No, it's
impossible. That's the other thing. Yeah. Like, am I going to need twice as much next year again? You know, right.
And what is freight going to cost then?
Yeah.
Well, you know, we always want product on the shelf for us to buy so we can buy it for a project and put it on a show. And
right.
We have to.
Can't do that
anymore.
You
can't do it. No, you have to buy based on what you think you're going to need.
It's an interesting expectation
that
when you say it like that, right? Like the rental companies want it to sit in inventory so that they can buy it as soon as they need it. But then there's the expectation that it has to sit in inventory and it doesn't give them any opportunity as a distributor or manufacturer to sort of pass that buck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little bit of an unfair advantage.
I have an install that we're working on right now that, you know, some things as simple as truss have like a 22-week lead time.
Oh, yeah. No, it's nuts.
You know, we have one small networking piece that has a 26-week lead time on it. And, you know, I'm trying to work with a client to see, can we go ahead and just buy everything and store it and just hold it in the shop and we'll invoice you as things come in? Are you willing to kind of front that money?
Sure.
So when we get to 24 weeks, I'm not telling you, hey, it's 16 more weeks for this that was in stock 20 weeks ago, but now it's not, you know?
Yeah.
I think that burden is going to have to be put back on the client somehow, some way.
How has the reception to that been so far?
Some people are okay with it. Some people are like, what do we do? And the other side of that is, you know, obviously turn on date warranties of the gear. If we buy it and hold it in the shop, can we extend the warranty to when we actually turn the project on?
Of course.
Right.
You know, things like that. It's just it's a lot more difficult to track. I mean, we used to be like, 3 weeks, that's a lot. 4 weeks, that's a lot. Uh-huh, but okay, uh-huh. You know, I mean, we're waiting 8, 9, 10 weeks for clamps.
Yeah.
You can't win.
Yeah. No, it's craziness. The silliest little things that will totally ruin it.
Yeah.
Well, and it ain't going to get better. The good news is it's not getting any better, you know,
for sure.
Yeah.
Learn to live with the devil.
Well, I wish we could talk to you after day two. So
I know
I have a little bit more insight, but no, this is all really good. I appreciate you taking the time to sit down and chat with us for a bit. Cause I respect your opinion on gear.
Thank you. And
yeah, I mean, I hope you enjoy the show again today and see some more great stuff. And
there's a lot to see, and I've heard about a lot of things that I haven't put eyes on yet. But
yeah,
I'm gonna like I said earlier, I'm gonna do the LDI Express today, like 10 minutes per booth, and just go.
You are not.
I am totally a liar. I'm doing it.
You're a liar.
Catch me halfway through at the water break.
I'm gonna sit and watch you at a booth, and I'm gonna go click timer.
yeah, please do.
And then I'll come and drag you out at 10 minutes.
Uh-huh. You'll drag me a circle bar. I know.
Thanks, and I'll see you on the show floor.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right, man. We'll be right back. Thank you.